Hey, there he is.
Hey, guess what?
What's
He's
that?
Not recording yet. Betty got a gift certificate for Christmas.
Yeah.
And she woke up at 5 p.m. today and wanted to go spend it. And we were in the car doing it. And then I got your text. I'm like, S***. And Jennifer turned around and they're going to drop me off. In which case I will call you and actually talk to you.
Oh, so you're actually foregoing the shopping trip for this?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, just me though. Just my participation.
Right.
So yeah, I'm going to do that and then I will talk to you soon.
All right. How long is it going
to
take you?
The next time I call you, I will be recording. It'll be about 5 minutes. Probably.
Okay, great. Talk to you in a bit. All right.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, I'm so late to call Ben. I'm calling Ben way too late. It's too late for me to call Ben, but I'm calling Ben because I called Ben way too late. I'm calling Ben and I'm calling Ben.
Hey, there he is again.
Hey, Ben Lawrence, how's it going?
Good. So this is the Interrupting a Shopping Spree podcast.
Yeah. Now, do the people know what you're talking about?
I'm going to include a little bit.
Okay.
Beforehand. But yeah.
I was going to pretend like you just found out about it.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Ben.
It's 2020.
I can't believe another year has come and gone. And it's debatable. Now, people, of course, say that the new millennium didn't start until 2001. But that's because we counted... This is where I'm confused. I'll explain. So... we counted the millennium starting at zero, right?
That was also a debate we had at on New Year's Eve when we actually started counting. Did the common era start at year zero or at year one?
See, and I believe people were saying it started at year zero, which is why 2001 was the... Now, I don't know if that's true, but this is one thing I will say. The 20s? Whatever people say, the 20s?
Yeah.
That started in 1920.
Right.
So, if we go with a common way of talking about decades, as in 10 years, starting, you know, the 20s, the 80s, you know, we don't say that 1980 was the end of the seven. Well, it was. Okay.
Well, so here's
arbitrary numbers, obviously, but
there's a this XKCD comic made the rounds. You probably saw it, where somebody's argument for the decade being between year zero and year nine instead of year one and year 10
uh-huh.
is that MC Hammer's Too Legit to Quit came out on VH1's. It came out in 1980 and was on VH1's Greatest Hits of the 80s.
Okay, so it came out in 1980.
Flawless logic for you. I probably got the song wrong, but the point is there.
No. But I think this is right. Which, by that logic, this is the starting... of the decade starting at zero.
Yeah.
So that comic supports my own hypothesis, so I'll go with that.
No, mine as well. I think, you know, it's it's 2020 to 2029, I will consider the 20s. And so it is a fresh new decade. Still has that fresh new decade smell.
So here's a peek into my life. I got home from work. And I sat down to watch Counterpart. Yes, it's our old friend J.K. Simmons. He's playing a spy.
Okay, bye.
Oh, we're done already? All right, well, see you, Ben. Yeah, sorry.
So J.K. Simmons is playing
A spy.
Right.
I don't want to get too much into it, but are you familiar with the show at all?
Only insofar as you told me about it last week.
Okay. It was on Stars. Oh, hey, that's another thing. For anybody who wants to impersonate me, this would be a good podcast to listen to. Just listen to all the podcasts. Hey, now, Ben, I don't want to necessarily, you know, doom myself to being replaced, but that might be a good way to get listeners.
Wait, what would be a good way to get listeners?
We farm our podcast out to other dimensions where my doppelgangers want to come to this reality and pretend to be me. Is so we let them listen to this podcast, and that way they know.
Is that the premise of Counterpart?
Yeah, that's the premise of Counterpart. And it's pretty, I mean, by now, pretty much everybody knows it. You find out in the first, like, little bit about it.
Okay.
So it's not a big spoiler.
So if you've watched the first episode, then you know about the whole premise. It's not a spoiler.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you watch any of the trailers for it, you know about
right.
the premise, really. Honestly.
One might say it's the central theme of the show.
Yeah. What makes us us? And all that sort of thing. So I'm sitting down to watch it. Betty comes up to me, tells me that she, you know, hasn't, you know, she woke up at 5 p.m.
From went to bed a at nap? 3.
Yeah, well no, just woke up. She went to bed at 3 p.m. or 3 a.m., sorry. 3 a.m.
That's a healthy
that's 14
night
hours,
of sleep.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a healthy days of sleep.
And so she was like, I feel like I kind of don't want to go anywhere, but I also do. And I could tell that she was hinting that she wanted to go somewhere, obviously.
Yeah.
But I was settled down to watch Counterpart. I had watched it for like a little bit, probably about 50 minutes.
50.
And then she was like, so are you just gonna watch TV all day? And I was like, and
well,
Jennifer was like,
she should at least let you finish the episode.
Well, no, the episode had ended because I had started it the night before.
Oh, okay.
The episode ended, a new episode started. So she was prompted by the ending of the episode. She was like, are you just going to watch TV all day? And then I was like, I don't know. And then Jennifer was like, well, we do have to go to the store to get food. And I was like, okay, fine. So we all piled into the car and we're driving. And that's when I got your text.
Yeah.
So I already didn't feel like going. So when you said, well, you're going to cut your shopping trip short, yes, I am. I'm absolutely going to cut my shopping trip short.
I was going to be like, you know, we can do this tomorrow. But since you said that Jennifer had already turned around, I'm like, all right, well, you know, a plan's a plan.
And that was very nice of her. Jennifer could already feel the vibe, knew what was up. And here's the thing. I would have gone and it would have been fine and all that. But not going feels even better.
Right, because
so,
now you have the house yourself, and we're not going to have a yelling for Betty segment this episode unless she comes back
yeah. before we're done. Oh, speaking about which, also, we learned something on my other podcast that we record here, Maladaptive.
Yeah,
which is something I should have come up with a long time ago. You can turn the furnace off. You can just go and turn it off, and so whether or not it's kicked on and running. When I'm recording my audio is really fully under my control.
Well, see, here's the thing. We're 202 episodes in. We obviously don't care about sound quality here because, as noted before, I just yelled goodbye to somebody here at Annex on the
yeah.
you know, on microphone. So,
hey, look, we're all about honesty here.
Exactly. But you got to be careful about turning the furnace off for an art project because where were we? I think we were at Scotto's house filming the coffee table.
Oh, yes.
And we turned the refrigerator off to film some scenes. And I think
you can
imagine what happened now
you
that I'm relaying
the story.
You
forgot to turn it back on?
Well, we remembered finally that evening, but it had been a number of hours. And so fortunately, you know, somebody who lived in the house noticed that the fridge was getting warm, so it's not like it was off for days. But it should have been turned back on earlier.
Sure.
than it was.
See, I feel as though in that situation, the thing that you described, I thought it was going to be a lot worse.
Right.
There are certain things, and we can get into this just a little bit. Certain rules, like in this house we blank, right? That I think are a little overboard. And then other things that I think are, you know, in this house we keep the refrigerator cold. Not really overboard. That's a good thing. But in the same way, given the circumstances, forgetting to turn it on after, you know,
yeah, filming something
a couple of hours is different than what might happen here, especially if Jennifer and Betty aren't around, if they're like gone or whatever. I could see myself forgetting to turn it on for like 3 days and just be like, I wonder why
it's so cold.
Yeah, exactly.
Is the furnace something where if you turn it off? No, you're not turning it off. You're just turning the thermostat off. So you don't have to, like, relight the pilot light or anything like that.
No, that's right. Thermostat off is the only thing we're doing. But anyway, so yay, finally, 202 episodes in. A little bit better audio quality. Oh, that's another thing I kind of want to note. People said, this is in 2019... somebody said, it was like the day before New Year's Eve. So what would that be? Like January 30th. And they said,
The day before New Year's Eve is what day?
January 30th.
December 30th.
Dang it. You're right. Thanks, Ben. So December 30th. Whoa, hold on. So December 30th, and the person says, at midnight tonight, it's going to be Ramon's day.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
24 hours to go.
Yep.
Which I get it. I want to be sedated. But my suggestion is that it's actually going to be that on December 30th, 2020. Because then it's 2020... I'll read the case, 24 hours to go, meaning there are only 24 hours left in 2020.
Right.
I think that's more correct.
I think, then you can start a new meme in just less than a year. What,
yeah,
363 days from now?
I can't wait, because I'll definitely remember.
And like those people saying, no, the decade starts in 2021, you could be like, no, this makes more sense for the end of 2020 than the end of 2019.
Exactly. Well, I already wrote it, and somebody was like, yeah, I could see that.
Everybody can
and
be
that's
like,
really, I mean, for the internet, that is true praise. yeah, I guess you're right. Is great. That's the best case scenario these days.
That's a virtual high five for a good joke.
Oh, Ben, we gotta talk about it.
What?
We gotta talk about it. The two news items that I know about. Okay, there is a police officer, and I don't know where, and I feel bad about that. But a police officer says he gets his receipt from McDonald's.
Yeah.
And the McDonald's has an expletive and the word pig on it.
Right. Yeah, I saw that.
Now, the way that I found out about this is that the chief of police for that police officer's precinct is announcing the I believe it's the resignation. He just says that this officer is no longer employed in this police department. And that he fabricated the thing.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, okay, that's the news article that I read. This guy is giving a press conference saying that this guy fabricated this thing. And he says, it's too bad that this was intended as a joke. And we wish he would have come forward before he made this a national incident, or before this became a national incident. Yeah, because later on in the article, you find out the reason it became a national incident is the guy who's giving the press conference tweeted onto his Facebook page, "Look at what one of my officers got," and raised a huge stink about it. McDonald's said that they have videotape exonerating their employees, to which the guy, again, giving the press conference at the time said, there's more to this than is on social media. I sure hope McDonald's can show this videotape that didn't exist when I talked to them on Saturday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He said that at one point in time. And then, once they actually showed him the videotape, he was like, well, I'm going to be more careful using social media in the future.
And so this guy's not resigning?
And no. He's not the guy who did the receipt thing, who did the fabrication. And here's the thing. He said it as a joke. I'm wondering if the guy who resigned is the guy who received the receipt, if it's the guy who, you know, if it's meant as a joke, a guy writing that on his own receipt doesn't make a lot of sense, but somebody else writing it on the guy's receipt as a prank would make sense. I'm not here to speculate, but what I am here to say is it was nice for the person for McDonald's to say, we look forward in helping the chief with his investigation. Yeah. I thought that was good.
Well, so if I was given a a challenge on to give details of the story, I'd probably fail because I didn't read too far into it. I would have thought. I mean, I thought that it was a Starbucks written on a cup, but whatever. And then I saw. So this story's been around.
Oh no, this is a different one. The Starbucks on the cup thing, that is a thing also.
Oh jeez.
And that was also fabricated.
So because how many of these stories are there?
And the guy who got a McDonald's sandwich with a bite taken out of it, it was proven somehow that he was the one that took a bite out of his own sandwich. The point is, if you are going to do this, pick someone other than a very, very, very high-level company that relies on the goodwill of police officers and the military as part of that. You don't mess with their money. Stop messing with their money.
Like big companies who also have, you know, the ability to pay high-priced lawyers. But my point was, how can you, like, even on a McDonald's receipt, how can you fabricate when I get something from McDonald's or from Starbucks is, you know, different because they actually do write on the cup. But when you get like a physical receipt, your name is typed on the receipt.
Oh, they wrote the words.
So it's
on
a
the
receipt and it's and
with
it says
a pen.
F pigs on the receipt.
Yes, that's right. And so what had happened was McDonald's had videotape of all angles during the incident, showing that no one from the McDonald's wrote on that receipt.
Right.
Because if you think about it, McDonald's, the chances of them even having a pen sometimes when you want one might be, you know, they're trying to avoid all of that, basically. So, I don't know, kind of interesting. But it reminded me, Ben, of a story that I may have told before on this podcast, but I'm going to tell again. This is at Madison Market in Seattle, Washington, right there in Madison, where I am still a member. I'm a lifetime member, even though I don't live in Seattle anymore. And it's the vegan lasagna incident. Do you remember the vegan lasagna incident?
I do not remember the vegan lasagna incident.
Okay, so I was in Madison Market, and they had a vegan lasagna. And I said, wow, this vegan lasagna looks really good. I'm going to get this vegan lasagna. And I walk up to the counter, and I have the vegan lasagna. I say, I would like this vegan lasagna. And he starts to ring me up, and a manager comes over and says, whoa, whoa, whoa. Is that the vegan lasagna? And the guy behind the counter says, yes, it is. And he goes, I don't know about that. And he said, who made it? And the guy said, I think Dennis made it. And the manager goes back and says to Dennis, is that the vegan lasagna? And Dennis says, I think Carl made that. And Carl, who is also back there, says, yes, that's the vegan lasagna. And the manager comes back and he goes, okay, that's the vegan lasagna. I guess we all learned something here today.
And what did we learn?
And then when he leaves, the guy behind the counter says, I learned I don't really want to work here anymore. You know, that kind of thing. Because Yeah, and this is what I'm talking about. The person in the wrong is also the only person that made it a thing.
Right.
It feels like.
It's a story of life.
And then we get to the other news story, which, of course, is that finally, Ben, Illinois has followed in the footsteps of others. They have passed a law where marijuana use is legal for recreational use for adults.
I saw that.
But what is the thing that they're doing differently than other states?
You can use your card to pay for it.
I didn't know that. Is that true?
No. I'm guessing because that's at least here in Washington, it's a cash only business.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Nothing shady about that. No. The thing that they are doing is they have worked out a way where like something like 11,000 people who are currently in jail for marijuana offenses are getting that expunged from their record.
Yeah, that's a good start. That needs to happen everywhere.
Exactly. And they're saying that it's step one in something that might work out for like 100,000 people. So that's pretty cool. Now, on the other side, and this is a PSA for those of us, or anyone who might be listening, I should say, who has a secret clearance or, you know, anything of that nature, if they work for the federal government or with the federal government, not so fast, buddy. Because not only is it pretty shady at this point, like you most likely will not be able to get your clearance with it, investing in a company that grows or sells or is involved in any way in the marijuana trade is also something that might get your security clearance not granted or revoked. So you got to be careful.
Right, because it's still federally illegal.
That's right. It's a weird, and I don't know where the state's rights people are on it. I hear it all the time with gun stuff. Don't know about this.
I'm pretty sure the state's rights people just pick and choose what they want to fight for.
Maybe. I bet you there's a good state's rights guy out there who right now is angrily penning something to us going, hey, wait a second. And then that's it because he forgot because he was smoking weed. I'm making a joke.
Well, performing
people
an abortion.
People who smoke weed have short-term memory problems, or so I hear. Now, here's the other thing, and this is the big one that that I have found out about because, you know, I like making sure that people are informed about this sort of thing. There are laws that have, or proposals, I don't know what you call them, bills? Maybe that's it, that has passed the House that would no longer make it a factor for security clearances.
Those are bills, yeah. There are allegedly 400 bills that have passed the House that are just sitting on the Senate floor because the Senate Majority Leader refused to bring them to a vote.
This is probably one of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, the idea basically is, to make steps so that it's this disparity between the federal and state level becomes a thing. But even if those pass, and this is the big reason I wanted to bring it up, the Department of Defense could still say, nope, not for us, buddy.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful. Know what you're doing.
Right.
And where you're doing it.
Well, it's also one of those things. I mean, the DOD is probably like, you're not allowed to do it at all.
Yeah.
You know, not even on your free time. Not even if you have a 2-week paid vacation.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you already that is the case at this time.
Yeah.
For sure.
But if it becomes, if they remove it from like, what is it? It's like a Schedule I drug or something to that effect. If they make it legal, recreational use legally, if they make recreational pot use legal in the United States, the DOD and other government agencies might still put their foot down.
Right. They might still say, like for instance, you know, if, well, here's an example. Let's say you don't pay your credit card bill for a while.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some things that are legal about it. I'm sure that you can kind of get away with it, maybe. But ruin your if credit you have, well, it, that's the thing. If you have a low credit score, it may affect your ability to get a clearance.
Yeah.
I anecdotally know of someone whose name shall not be mentioned, who was going into the Air Force for, and this is not me, by the way, I just want to let you know, going to the Air Force for something, went to basic training. Basic training is 6 weeks. During the time he was in basic training, his parents did not pay his credit card bill. And so he got a bad mark on his credit, and the program that he was going to go into rejected him because of his bad credit rating.
That sounds like there should be some sort of loophole to get out of that specific situation.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing, don't quote me on this at all, but I think that a lot of the security clearance stuff is based on how well you handle your business, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's yours to lose, basically. It's like you can mess it up real easy for yourself.
Well, and also, I'm assuming that somebody who's granted security clearance from the U.S. government, you know, the government wants the people with clearances to, you know, pay attention to the details.
Right. This is what I mean. Yeah, exactly. Like, if they say, for example, I'm just going to throw this one out there. Have you ever aided or abetted a terrorist? I'm using this as an example. And you say no, that's pretty good. If they say, have you ever aided or abetted a terrorist? And you go, huh, let me think. You know, I don't really know. I met a lot of people when I was in college. One of them could be, they don't want you to do that kind of stuff. You have to, you should, of course, have thought about it, but you should probably have an answer.
Right.
Ready to go as far as that kind of thing goes. The same thing, have you ever declared bankruptcy? If you say, yes, I've declared bankruptcy, it was on this date, that's great. If they say, have you ever declared bankruptcy? And you go, what is bankruptcy? I mean, in reality, isn't this country morally bankrupt or whatever?
Money's just a construct that we invented to make transactions easily. And so, nothing doesn't really mean anything.
Exactly. Yours to lose is the idea.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I wonder, Ben, I'm so curious now, if someone who believes in the sovereign citizen stuff is getting interviewed for security clearance, how does that go?
I would love to see that. I don't think that's ever happened.
Oh, I'm sure it has.
No. The people who are considered themselves sovereign citizens are not going to apply for federal positions.
I'm thinking of a specific person.
Oh, really?
Who I know... I can't. Yeah. Never mind. But I'm wondering. I'm really wondering.
Well, if you know this person personally, then ask them and let us know.
Oh, no. They're not somebody that I would want to ask.
Okay.
Here's the thing. This is what I'll say, Ben. There are people who talk about their beliefs much more than they should. In many public areas.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm going to say. You got to be smart.
I'm wondering if you're talking about somebody that I know.
No, I am not.
Okay.
I am not.
Or are you just saying that to throw me off the trail?
Maybe I'm... Oh, who knows? Nobody knows. This is a podcast. Everybody loves me. So yeah, those are the two news things I know about. Are there any news things that you know about that are important?
Nope. I know nothing important in this new year. I did see a statistic that came out that said in his first 3 years as president, our president has spent 24% of his days at a self-owned property.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Has
spent more in 3 years playing golf than Obama did in 8.
Now, the one thing I will say, yes, that golf thing is true. Just to give our president a little bit of a benefit of the doubt, because he needs it. Yeah. He does own a lot of property. So... So the
it just
sheer
happens
number,
to land at one of them. One out of every 4 days.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You own enough places, you're gonna probably a higher percent.
It's not. It's not so much that he went to one of his own golf courses. It's that he's the president, and so we're paying, you know, for these golf trips.
It's not like he has named a place that he always goes to that he owns the second White House or anything like that.
No, it wouldn't be like that at all. Anyway, it's just funny because it just shows how Republicans don't really care about hypocrisy.
Oh, sure.
And that, you know, our president was constantly tweeting about how he thought Obama spent too much time golfing and that if he were elected president, he would be too busy working to golf.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing that always happens. It's the our guy thing.
Right.
This is horrible, except when our guy does it.
Yeah.
Hey, search the podcast for our guy. And probably out of our 202 episodes, we bring it up at least 50% of the time because it's always true.
Always seems to be something. Speaking of that our guy thing, I have a Republican friend who is an our guy supporter and this was during the election, and somebody was like, you can't really like him, can you, or do you like him? And my friend was like, and when I say my friend, he's a dude I went to high school with who I haven't spoken since high school, he was like, well, no, I don't like him, but he's our guy, so I'm supporting him.
And that's the other thing, right? There's a line in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that the president's job, this is talking about the president of the galaxy, but I think, you know, he might be pointing fingers and stuff like that. The president's job is not to actually wield power, but to distract from power.
Right.
And that really describes, you know, kind of what's going on in a lot of ways.
Oh, but there is fresh news as of a couple hours ago, I guess.
Wait, whoa, I probably don't know this. What is the fresh news?
Another Democratic candidate has dropped out of the 2020 race.
Oh, no. Which one is it?
Julian Castro is no longer going to be a candidate for the presidency.
Well, all I can say is that I don't know him that well, but I know some people liked him. Is he the... Okay, let me ask. Do you know, is he the guy who was running for the DNC chair and didn't get it? Is that who I'm thinking of?
I do not know.
Okay. Anyway, I think, someone was talking about how they wish he and Cory Booker were getting more...
Right.
More juice.
Being one of the few people of color in the field.
Yeah. Now there's a chance still that he might be chosen as a VP. There are lots of people who are out of the race who might be chosen as a VP. It would be kind of cool.
I'm guessing that all the, not all, but most of the people who are running for office will find government jobs sometime. If the 2020 election should go the Democrats' way.
Boy, I often wonder about this. The Democrats for 2020, if it's gonna work out. it's one of those things of I'm reminded of George Bush's second run, George W. Bush's second run. Because I was in Seattle, right? I was convinced, oh, there's no way that he's gonna get elected again,
right?
A second time, and then I was flabbergasted. So. I think that the smart thing would be to just assume that Trump is going to get elected, and then be pleasantly surprised if he doesn't get elected.
I think if he doesn't get elected, I'm going to be more than just pleasantly surprised.
Well, and then there's the other question of what's he going to do when he's in office if he knows that he's not going to be the president?
Well,
because
he's already a long time.
It is a long time,
but he's already acting like he's a lame duck. And insofar as that that's how he's always acted, just burning everything to the ground.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be fun to see. I know that our listeners don't always like it when we get deep into politics, or one particular listener. Speaking about that, are there corrections today?
There are corrections today, Ben.
Hey, well, let's talk about it then. So, as you might notice, Ben and I run a pretty freewheeling shop here. One of the aspects of our podcast is that we don't do any research. We don't look stuff up when we're talking, and often we don't know what we're talking about. When I say we don't know what we're talking about, we know what we're talking about, but we don't actually have any details or facts about it. We try our best, and are fighting what some people have called the Wikipedification, if that's a word, of human knowledge, in that we don't actually remember stuff anymore, we just know how to look it up. And that means if the internet goes down, we're all a little screwed. So we're trying our best to see what it's like when two humans who are relatively smart only have their own wits to work out amongst them. Does that, see, even that, I'm not sure, Ben. But the big thing...
Roll with it.
Okay. The big thing is this. We also think that our podcast will be an aid to future archaeologists as they try to figure out what happened during the 21st century. And for that reason, we want to make sure that the record can be corrected. And we thought long and hard about how to do this. And we've determined that the best way to do this is through something we call
corrections.
Ding! You, the audience, can write to us at Ben's email at yahoo.com@gmail.com.
Yep.
And tell us what we got wrong, what we could have gotten righter, and if there are any other informational parts of things that you want us to know. And we have at least two semi-regular contributors. One is Stephen McCandless, and the other is known as Jennifer Fact Checker. She is also my wife, Jennifer Pratt. And I believe that she has written to us with some corrections, Ben. Am I correct?
You are correct, sir.
Hey, awesome.
Yeah, so last week we were talking about Steve from Blue's Clues, and, you know...
That Steve killed a guy.
Killed a guy, yeah. And I mentioned that he left Blue's Clues because he started losing his hair, and he didn't want to be a children's show host with thinning hair. Turns out I was right. Steve from Blue's Clues did leave due to his hair loss, sort of. Additionally, he had a music career. He worked with the Flaming Lips on several projects. His album Songs for Dust Mites is pretty good. I had no idea about all that music stuff.
Hey, pretty neat. And of course, I just disclaimer, Steve from Blue's Clues did not kill a guy that we know of.
That we know of.
Yeah.
Anyway, we also, there's only one more correction. We also talked about the North Korea Christmas surprise that was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And I wondered if it was North Korea or Iran who have circulated Photoshopped pictures of their own missile launches. And so number two, both Iran and North Korea have sent out Photoshopped missile launch photos and digitally manipulated videos of missile launches. So there you go.
That's fun. That's
and
really
that
cool.
is corrections.
And let me ask you a question, Ben.
Yeah.
This is going to be bad for me, but I have to be completely honest.
Okay.
The American embassy that was attacked recently.
Yes.
Was it in Iraq? Or was it in Iran?
I think it was in Baghdad. I think it was in Iraq. I don't know. I just heard that there was an American embassy in the Middle East.
Baghdad is where I remember it being.
Yeah.
I just didn't know which country Baghdad was in. This is, again, how my wife has mentioned before. I would make a very bad spy.
Right.
The joke I always use is they were either Albanian or Armenian. I guess it doesn't really matter which. To which, of course, she always replies, "It does matter which. How did you ever get this detail?"
I guess
that sort of thing.
They're Austrian or Australian, same thing.
Oh, now that one I know about, especially because of young Einstein. For years, Australians have wanted to put bubbles in their beer, and Albert Einstein, the famous Australian mathematician, figures it out, or physicist. Yeah, you've never seen Young Einstein, I'm guessing, maybe?
I do not believe I've seen Young Einstein.
Yeah, it's Yahoo Sirius.
Okay, now I know I have not seen Young Einstein.
Yeah, I've watched it at least once. Right. Don't know that much more about it. So anyway, yeah, the... So the whole, you know, embassy thing, it's a problem. People don't like it when our embassies are attacked.
No, in fact, the Republicans grilled Clinton for 11 hours over the Benghazi embassy raid.
Yeah. Now let me ask you a question. Benghazi, whenever you hear that, do you feel a little bad about it just because your name is involved? Or are you over that?
No, it's if I, you know, was a... I always thought of it as if I were forming my own Fugazi cover band.
Ben! Ben, you gotta, okay, this is it. It's not a cover band. It's you doing folk covers of Fugazi songs.
Yeah.
Oh, you... Let's
call it Benghazi.
Oh, my gosh, Ben.
That has to have been done. I mean, come on, by now?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's wide open for you. Because here's the thing. This is why I think so. It would be in poor taste to do that. Which is why I think that maybe if someone is brave enough, hint, hint, to do it, the field is wide open, sir.
I feel bad that I don't even know any Fugazi songs.
Oh, The Waiting Room. I am a patient boy. I wait.
Oh, that one. No? I still don't know it, no.
Okay. Hey, speaking about still not knowing it, what is next on our list of performance art?
Last week
appearances.
Last week we visited a letter to Paul.
Oh yes.
This next one is a fun one.
Did we find out if I actually got spanked?
No, we did not.
You should ask around.
I'll ask around.
Ask around and find out. I want to know who spanked me. I will get my revenge.
All right, so Paul, dig this. Our next performance... So today, as we're recording this, is January 2nd, 2020.
That's right.
Our next performance was January 2nd, 2004.
Wow.
Yeah.
16 years ago.
16 long-ass years ago.
This performance art appearance could now legally drive.
Yes, and that performance art appearance is Jumpstart the Funk.
Oh, speaking about driving, we did it. Jumpstart the Funk is actually one of my more favorite pieces. Yeah. Because I don't even remember how it started. When I was a kid, this was, I believe, in high school, I got either a tape or a CD, I don't know which was going on when I was in high school, but of Parliament Funkadelic. And one of the things that I liked about it was all the stuff that was nonsensical in it, that I then realized later on was actually about sex a lot of times. But for the time, it's like, nobody knows what they're singing about. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So Jumpstart the Funk, I believe at one point in time, were you driving your pickup at the time, or was it a different car?
I don't think I had my pickup at the time. This might have been when I had my little blue Honda that couldn't make it up the hill to your house.
Yeah, because that was the thing, is that we actually had to jumpstart the car at one point. I think what would happen is I would push you down the hill And then you were able to start it.
Yeah. It was a manual transmission car, so I would pop the clutch.
Yeah. And so those two things sort of combined into jumpstart the funk.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, what's wrong? Oh, my funk won't start.
Yeah, so there's a whole bit.
What did you do? I left my funk nights on all night. Oh, speaking about which, that's kind of funny, given the Chicago trip where we...
Did you leave your funk lights on?
The lights. Did I not tell you about that? We had to get our car...
Yeah, but you didn't say that it was because you left your lights on.
Oh, well, the blinkers were on and also the lights were on, yes.
So there's one thing...
Both times? I don't know. Maybe also the dome light.
So during this performance, I do remember one moment. There's a line right before like the song comes on, where we say something like and right now so far the funk hasn't killed anybody, and then you know the beat stops and you go at least not yet.
Yes, I remember that.
during the performance, we just got a loud guffaw from Jason Schmidt, who was in the audience.
Nice. Oh, hey, is this... Let me ask you a question, because I remember there being a video for this.
Yeah, we filmed a video for this.
Is this one of the few ones where the video that we filmed wasn't what we used for the performance? That
correct.
We actually did a live performance?
We did a live performance first in 2004. And then in... December of 2011, we showed the film.
Oh, wow. So, wait, did we make this 7 years later, the film?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. And I think we did a thing where we put shoes on our hands, I want to say.
Yes. We were wearing, like, hats and jackets, and it looked like it's from an old, like, VCR.
Oh, I like this. I think this is fun.
Yeah.
Do we have signs?
Yeah, there were crayon colored signs.
Okay, I'm remembering this now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the music was pre-recorded, at least the jump part.
Right.
Was it all recorded as though we were doing a stunt show spectacular?
What do you mean?
Just mouthing the words, the hey Ben.
Well, yeah, I think we lip synced all that on the live show. I don't remember actually doing that live.
I know that we did our best throughout all of our things to never have to memorize any lines. That was one of the big things. So I think that we just recorded all of it.
I think also this might have been around the time when Brett started giving us things to do, like outlines.
Yes.
Because the last few performances were sort of like we were kind of falling back on the same things, right?
Yeah.
Extreme S'mores, we just like, you know, threw things at the audience and at you. Letter to Paul, which is have the audience spank you. Haikido, which was earlier in 2003, it was just, you know, you guys beating up on me with bats.
Yeah.
So after that. I can now see a thing happening in all of our performances where I can see what Brett has told us to do.
Now, one of the things that's interesting, I don't know if you know this. I think so. I think we mentioned it at the time. But Brett and I went and saw The Five Obstructions, which is Lars von Trier and another director whose name I don't remember, where they would give themselves... Like, so yeah, Lars von Trier would give this other director five things that he must do or could not do when making a film.
Yeah.
And then he'd have to make the film. And they were all very... The thing that they found was that the more constraints they were given, the better their films ended up being most of the time.
Right. Yeah, and I think it worked well for us because many times we needed that focus. Because when when we were staring down the barrel of a spin the bottle, you know, a week out, and we were just talking, would be like, well, I don't know, what do you want to do this time around? So if we had something like, I want you to do a music video, or I want you to do a live theater piece, but it has to have no dialogue, you know, something like
right.
that. Exactly. Then that really helped us focus the ideas.
And of course, we should also mention that sometimes we would find little loopholes, but I think that was fine. And other times we'd plan something and we'd be pretty far into it. And then at the last minute, we'd go, hey, wait a second. This isn't working. What if we just do blank? And then blank turned out to be... you probably didn't make a note about the times that happened, but it would be interesting to see if you ever were able to.
No, there's no notes on when that happened, but...
But maybe we'll remember. There's always a chance.
Maybe.
That the old memory will work.
Well, I mean, have we talked about... we have talked about Midnight Road Trip to Tacoma. Have we done that yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Where that performance was altered because you forgot the tape.
I forgot the tape.
Which we discovered right before, right when Bruce was introducing us.
Yeah. I believe, if I remember correctly, it was something like this. Ben, I don't have the tape. Ben. Okay. And we had our mustaches.
And hats, I believe. And shirts.
Yeah. It still worked out great. People still loved it.
No, yeah.
Really, the only thing that didn't happen was us going to Tacoma, which is fine.
Which is,
turned out...
Well, technically, it would have been Fife.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Which, again, not that bad of a thing to not have to do in all actuality.
Right, especially when it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right. Again, the origin of the famous phrase, nothing worse than people getting mad at you because you said you were I can't even do it, Ben. And then not going. I can't do it. But the big thing is this. There were some people who were mad at us, but there were a lot of other people who totally understood.
Right.
And, I can only imagine, Ben, what would happen if we had the social media culture we have now during our performances.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Things might have gone... We might have been in trouble for not going to Tacoma.
I think, yeah, a lot more things would have found our... a lot more of our things would have found their way to YouTube or whatever the YouTube was at the time.
And maybe not for maybe good not. Reasons.
Exactly.
Yes.
Be reblogged or retweeted. Look at these two chuckleheads. Think they're funny.
Exactly. So in some ways, we were part of the golden age, Ben, when you could just be dumb.
Exactly.
Nobody cared.
And the only people who will probably maybe remember are the 70 people or so who were in the audience at the time.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before, but I'd love to take the last little bits of this to talk about, just for a second, the magic of theater, Ben.
The magic of theater. Yeah.
The idea that at one point in time, you actually had an audience that was different than any other audience. Now the audience is everyone. But for a while, you could do stuff like it's been the bottle. You could do something with the understanding that most likely the people that were there were going to be down for the thing that you were doing.
Yeah.
Spin the Bottle audiences were great, very forgiving.
Yeah.
Of,
very willing to go with you on whatever journey you wanted to take them.
Right. Subject matter wise, pretty much, except that, you know, again, if you're a stand-up comic, don't do Spin the Bottle because... Well, no, then that's not even true. If you're a good stand-up comic, again, yeah. Montgomery...
I think
people love you.
I think in stand-up has found a resurgence at Spin the Bottle.
Well, it'd be because we've gotten better stand-ups.
Yeah, and before a time, it was definitely a death knell.
And I think it was because of, and I, you know, all love to the new comics coming up. It was because at the time, stand-up comedy was still full of just misogyny and you know, hackness, and now what we're saying is that you guys are good, you're good now, and it's nice, but that's the thing, right? You could do something in your small audience And it would happen, and then it would be forgotten or remembered, and when it was remembered, it would change and all that. One of the reasons, and this is a great time to talk about it, episode 202, that's one of the reasons why I didn't like it when we were filmed, and would often say to the Seattle channel not to film it. Because, well, two reasons. One is, when I was on the Bravo show, that was a weird conflict of stuff.
Right.
But, on the other hand, also, I liked it better sometimes because our shows were often better remembered than watched.
People look at them through rose-colored glasses when they're in the past.
That's right.
As opposed to seeing a terrible video.
Exactly.
And remembering just how bad it was.
Because our long pauses, right? When you remember it, you remember them being excruciating, but you're not experiencing them again.
Right.
So it's easy. And that was one of the things, much like Scorsese in The Irishman, which I haven't seen, we were not afraid to let the audience sit a while and wait for something to happen. And I don't know if you could get away with that these days either. Maybe so.
But I don't, you know. Whenever, you know, if you're a performer, the pauses feel so much longer than they do to an audience
member.
That's
true. Yeah. And the act that goes before you seems so much longer.
Oh yeah.
Also, except on some days when the whole audience felt like it was long. Also. I'm thinking about the couple of times when Steven or Brett had to intervene to let someone know that there were other performers who were still going to have to go on that night.
You're gonna have to get off the stage.
We do not want you to burn up all the goodwill.
We did. I do remember a couple times where Brett had to tell someone to you know, cut their act short. But there was a time back in the old days, back at 4th Avenue, where we actually did turn the lights off on a performer.
Which one was it? Was it the lady in the hat, or was it Jesus and his dad?
No, we didn't do that for Jesus and his dad, but
or
we
Jesus
probably
and
should
his
have.
Dad, or, who was the devil.
Yeah, Jesus and the devil. No, it was the lady in the hat. It was like the Weimar sort of performer.
Yeah.
I don't want to say her name, but yeah, she went on. I don't want to speculate on how long we let her go, but it was probably a good half hour.
And the thing was, it wasn't that she had a character, and she was in that character. She didn't break, and it wasn't bad necessarily.
But it wasn't funny.
It was
pretty dull. Which is, I think, you know, even if you go a half an hour, if you're the most hilarious thing, you're still gonna, you know, people are still gonna be like, you need to get off the stage. But it's even more so when you're not when your act isn't very good.
Right. Well, I'm thinking about the times when I've seen like a really good violinist or bass player is another one.
Yeah.
Where I'm watching and I'm like, this is really good. This is really good. Wow, this is great. And eventually I'm like, wow, how long has this been? Is it only 15 minutes? Wow, that's a pretty long. You know, it's tough sometimes. It's tough.
Right.
And I think a lot of it is just that it's unbroken. Like Primus, right? When they were done, I was sad. And I think it's because they have songs, and the songs are, you know, finite chunks.
They live with you forever.
Whereas if it had just been Les Claypool playing the bass for 2 hours with no break, I might have gone, hey, this is too long.
Maybe change the channel.
Yeah, exactly. I just thought of something. It's a little fun treat for me. I was like, you know what would be a good band is Les Claypool and Tom Waits together. And then I realized Tommy the Cat, Les Claypool, and
yeah,
Tom Waits
right.
play together. So
yeah,
so there's something. Man, I haven't really checked out anything Les Claypool's done in a very long time.
I haven't either. I heard that Herb was back with the band.
What?
And like for a
Are
tour.
Are you saying Herb the Ginseng drummer?
Herb the Ginseng drummer.
Oh, my goodness. Also, I don't know if you saw, I have a banjo ukulele now.
You have a banjolele?
It is, yes. It is my favorite. I'm saying sorry to my my electric ukulele and my other ukulele. But yeah, it's so great.
Yeah, the banjolele. I was always wanted one of those, but they were so expensive.
I got this one for $100.
Wow,
about
sounds like a bargain.
It was. It's made in China. Sorry, China. Well, actually, no. Sorry, welcome, US. China. Yeah. but here's the thing. I have given away and all my old broken instruments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm focusing now on learning how to play the ukulele well.
So, like 3 weeks ago, or maybe 4 weeks ago, you wanted your bass, and then 2 weeks ago, you got your solid body ukulele.
Yes.
And now this week, you have a banjolele.
And that's it.
What are you going to get next week?
Next week, I'm going to get better at my... So, here's the thing. This is the great part now. So, I have my regular ukulele, which I practice on mostly because it's not as loud as the banjolele. Yeah. The banjolele, which I play, because the same technique for the ukulele and the banjolele is used.
Right.
So I'm practicing now like this. And then if ever I want to do something spooky and weird sounding, I play my electric uke through my effects pedals and stuff, which I can't do with a contact mic. I mean, I could, but it's not great.
No, we talked about that.
Yeah. Shout out to Rick Miller. Rick Miller, who gave me the contact mic that I'm using.
Oh, that was nice
of him. And I don't know if he even remembers that he did. And Rick, I'm sorry if I've stolen your contact mic. I don't think I did, though. I think he gave it to me.
Give it to you. He loaned it to you.
Oh, shoot. Is that true? Were you there when that happened?
No,
okay. Ben, my heart sank for a little bit. And I was like, oh, no. What if? But it's actually the contact mic from the Danger Uke, which is pretty cool. And with that, Ben, don't think we're going to be yelling for anyone.
Oh,
this month
must be having
a good shopping trip. Let's do it for a second. Hey, Betty.
Oh God, nothing.
Hey, Betty.
Nope.
I guess that's it.
Well, right. in that case.
Ben, it's been great talking to you.
Yeah.
And thank you for reminding me that we have a podcast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, after 4 years of doing
this. And until then, all right, I'll talk to you later, Ben.
All right. Hey, man, keep it wrong.
Keep it wrong, buddy.
All right.
See ya.
Talk to you later.
Bye.